Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Bad Hasbara, the world's most moral podcast. My name is Matt Lieb, and I am your host for this podcast and this evening and forever. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Right off the bat, I just want to say all y'all who are new to this and have like emailed and like talked to me online, I appreciate it. You guys are, you're doing a lot of the work for me. You're sending me interesting pieces of Hasbara. You're sending me great emails. No one has yet sent me any hot, salacious photos of themselves. Good. I'm married and I don't want that. No one wants that. But thank you. Give us 5 stars in a review on the Apple Podcast store app. And then give us 5 stars, not four, fuck off, 5 stars on Spotify. It helps people find it. And of course, if you're listening to this / watching this on YouTube, subscribe and do all that shit. But you know, also listen to the podcast, because that's the only way this thing makes money. Help me. Anyways, today, oh, we have a great show. Our guest today, for the first time I think ever in the, well, certainly in the history of this podcast, but for the, like, the first time I think in any of the podcasts that I've done, my guest is here with me. He's right next to me, which is nice, because, you know, usually I'm just talking into a screen.
Yeah.
And that's not fun, because I feel like I'm not getting like the full, like the vibe, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Look, I mean, it's one thing to try and intimidate someone into silence and obsequious just agreement with everything I say over Zoom.
Right, right.
But actually in person with the eyes.
I know, I'm scared.
And the, like, I actually can feel your fear.
Yeah, I'm like shrinking as you speak.
Right. Well, that speaks to my training in Hasbara, really.
Oh, okay. So you are a trained Hasbarist. All right. It's Daniel Mate is here. He's a friend of the pod, friend of mine, a newly acquired friend.
Yeah.
We started corresponding after the 7th.
Yes.
When we were both just putting out videos, you know, on the internet, just, you know, screaming into the void.
Yeah.
And we just started talking, and one thing led to another, and we're in love. One thing led to another, and we did Hanukkah together, which is very nice.
Yeah, here in LA, we did it. You came to a Hanukkah event that I co-organized and hosted at my friend's place, and it was amazing to meet you. I'm such an...
Yeah.
I mean, your comedy is so good that I think I've told you this. I encountered your comedy, one of your videos, and of course your shtick, your whole bit, is playing sort of
a liberal Zionist,
a well-intentioned, very sincere liberal Zionist who's trying to sound very reasonable to himself, and the minute he starts talking, the utter horrificness of his worldview,
of his rationality and his logic,
the banality of his evil. I mean,
he's
a perfect Hannah Arendt character, comes through. I was so fooled by your excellent writing and deadpan delivery that I like went and retweeted this thing. I'm like, listen to this liberal Zionist equivocating apologetics. This guy actually believes. And then I looked at it again, because maybe I was just looking at it. I was in this mode where you're like, in just the on the hedonic tread, to quote Matt Chrisman, the hedonic treadmill of, of reactivity.
Yeah.
You know, just seeing the, so I just saw the subtitles. I hadn't even tuned in to hear your tone of voice.
Right.
So I was just seeing the words. And of course, tone is everything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I was like, this fucker, look at this guy. This is the epitome of everything I hate about liberals. And then I watched it again. I was looking at the comments, be like, hey, well done, Matt. This was excellent.
Yeah.
And your wife, you know, reposts it. And like, I get that she's a comedian.
Yeah.
And I go back, I'm like, oh, fuck, I got got.
Yeah.
I totally got got by this guy. And
then I
was just yours forever after that.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. There's it doesn't always go that direction because I think that there's so much content that's happened for the last 3 months of people saying almost verbatim the exact same things I'm saying that you just can't keep up with it. So it's just like, quote, tweet, fuck you, quote, tweet, fuck you, quote, tweet, fuck you. And so there's a few people out there when whenever I have a video or someone posts something of mine, there's always someone who just saw a little clip like a month ago and said, no, 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 that guy's a Zionist. And I'm just like, no, bro, you didn't finish watching the fucking video, which, I mean, just speaks to the level of like competency that recent Israeli Hasbara has been you know, like operating at. Because if my joke version, my parody version of guys like that is tricking people, it means that literally they are just saying the things they are saying are so disconnected from, I think, the sentiment of normal people that they don't see the irony in anything that they're saying.
Well, in times like this, it really does try. It pushes the boundaries of satire to the point of, can satire even survive?
I know.
A time when things are so on the nose and on the open, and irony is so
dead
and outlawed because the irony is the ability to hold on to contradictory things at once.
Right.
And in times of fascist absolutist thinking and the kind of sentimentality that comes along with that, especially in the Zionist context, having a dark edge to your humor, like, to me, that's the real threat to Jewishness.
I know. I agree.
It's like pesticide that's killing off the aphids and
yes.
the biome of Jewish, you know, not agriculture, but culture.
Right.
Our intellectual, like, agriculture.
Actual culture. Yeah. Like, we are. Yes, all of the good bacteria is dying.
Yes.
And what's left is just this bare white bone of fucking fascism. And you're just like, no, 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 no. This is, you've ruined what makes being Jewish beautiful.
Right.
And you've turned it on its head into this, like, this, because it's not, I've said before, it's not gallows humor when the hangman makes a joke, like that's not gallows humor.
Before we bring our next hangy up here, folks. Yeah.
So I was killing children, and I said, "Oh yeah, Palestinian babies die like this." Anyways, it's like it's not. It ruins what makes. And it's not, I was going to say, ruins what makes being Jewish, I think, beautiful and special.
Certainly what makes being Ashkenazi Jewish beautiful.
Sure. And I feel like, and it's not to say that it's not like a fetishization of the victimhood. It's the, like, the fact that in that, like, cauldron molded a certain type of person with a certain worldview, a certain sense of humor, a certain... just like culture and sense of being.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, you know, Israel has taken that from me, you know, a way it feels like you're watching the appropriation of what seems to me to be a diasporic Jewish culture and then trying to graft it onto something that, you know, and trying to claim it as this is the ultimate expression of being Jewish, being someone who loves Israel, being someone who, you know, fights in the IDF, being someone who does the things that the Israeli government does. And I just, like, it makes me feel bad because I'm like, no, that's not.
Yeah,
it.
Well, they can't take it from you. They can't take it from us, but they can try, and they need to, because the fact is that the gifts of being a Jew in exile, and again, mm-hmm. The more I learn about the complexity of Jewish identity all over the world, I want to be careful that I'm not painting all Jews with the same pale. The same pale of settlement brush.
Right. You know, nice.
Which is to say that, you know, Mizrahi or Sephardic Jewish culture is very different.
Very different.
But certainly from the perspective of like the lineage that you and I come from, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know, my father's Hungarian. On the other side of the family, the lineage goes through Poland and Lithuania, things like that. There's an outsider status that grants us a perspective.
Yeah.
Where we can see through pieties, we can see through hypocrisies, we can see through the temporary, we can see through the false permanence of regimes and empires, because we know that everything changes. We're here one generation, we'll be somewhere else the next.
Yeah,
you know, we don't get too attached to objects or identifications, because we're identified with a tradition, a way of thinking, a way of seeing the world, and moral principles, mm-hmm. and traditions that are portable, that we can take with us on our backs, like matzah and Passover,
you know?
What is that? That's storytelling, that's humor, mm-hmm. that's poking fun at the powerful. Now, what happens when we become the powerful? We have to kill off our ability to see complexity, and it becomes crude, and it becomes sentimental, and it becomes earnest in the worst way. You know, like earnestness is good, but this is like earnesty. Like it's like just a kind of a sappy sentimentality.
For the young people out there, it's called cringe.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's what you say as cringe. Yes, 100%.
Right. It is how you say a cringe.
Yeah, it is cringe.
So I refuse to let them take that. You know, and that's part of what I resonated so much with when I saw your content, the word I hate.
Yeah, no, me too.
Toilet that's overflowing has a lot of content.
I know. But a fucking box of milk has content.
But your work, you know, your work and your output and what you removed. It's like this moment, we don't get to choose our moments. And this moment for many of us, and there are some bright spots in it, which doesn't make it any less horrifying,
right? Yeah, yeah.
But one of them has been seeing all kinds of people rise to the moment in their way, in the way that they are called to do. And so when I saw your stuff, I'm like, here's a comedian using short form social media videos to really crystallize different points of hypocrisy, so that people see something they can't unsee, so that the next time they hear it, they're not just going to have a queasy weird feeling of like, oh, did I just get molested,
right?
Like
yeah,
and you'd be like, fuck yeah, I just did get molested, and that's the fucker who did it, and get off of me.
Yeah,
like,
run.
It's a kind of inoculation that you're doing,
and
I'm trying to do that in my own way.
It's funny you mentioned that feeling, but that is, I think I have never heard it put that way before, but that is exactly what it feels like when you're dealing with the rationalization, and especially the using of like the language of social justice. Oof. In order to justify these atrocities. It feels like getting molested because you are questioning yourself. You're questioning your own like lived experience, your own brain, and you're going like, is it possible that I'm just some fucking alien who, when I look at a crying child or I look at someone holding, you know, their dead family in their arms, that I like feeling for them? Like, is there something I don't know? Yeah. Like, isn't this? And there's like a connection there where you feel this icky feeling, but you're just not. You just don't have the confidence to say anything, and you're afraid of the consequences of what you're saying, which is, that's the first time I've heard it put that way before, but I think that resonates.
Well, people have been throwing around the DARVO acronym, which is mm-hmm. not something I was familiar with, and I forget what the components of it, the five letters are, but they name different strategies and tactics and ways of operating that narcissistic gaslighters use.
Okay, so this is
deflect, accuse, I forget what they all stand for.
Oh, interesting. I had not heard that yet.
So yeah, so people have been pointing out that
let's look that up.
At this point in the development of Hasbara, and do you know what the word Hasbara actually literally means?
To explain.
Yeah, it means explanation.
Right.
And yeah. I remember when I was in Zionist summer camp, and I was a Zionist summer camp program leader back in the day. When we were living in Israel for 10 months, and this is a progressive left-wing one.
Right.
But they unironically gave us a two-day Hasbara workshop about basically how to explain Israel to the world, because the world fundamentally, constitutionally, is born to misunderstand Israel.
Right.
So we have to explain it.
Yeah, we got
to explain. It's really just all about explaining.
Yeah, yeah. Daniel, you got some splaining to do.
That's exactly. Yeah, yeah. Splain.
Yeah.
So I forget where I was going there with that. But no, yeah, so the narcissistic gas, it used to be that it was just about spreading false narratives that you could just, you know, we made the desert bloom.
It was
a land without a people,
pure
land, blah, 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 blah. The Arabs rejected every peace offer. You know,
right.
We thought those things were true. So we were just trying to explain. So it wasn't so subconsciously cynical.
Right.
It was just wrongheaded.
Right. Yeah. It was factually incorrect, but it was also just what you had, and it kind of put a bow on everything.
That's right. They were, you know, it's like the whole postmodern obsession with narratives. They have their narrative. We have our narrative.
Yes.
We're in a marketplace of narratives.
Yeah. Well, everyone's got a different truth.
That's right. We're coming to the shuk with our narrative. Yeah. Let's haggle over our narrative.
Yeah. You know? Right. Exactly.
Yeah. But at this point in the terminal, what can I say? Just the
death spiral.
The death spiral of Hasbara. Yeah. It's at the point where all it has left is the most egregious, abusive,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
sociopathic, and sometimes psychopathic
mm-hmm.
tactics. And no wonder everyone's feeling like their soul is being diddled, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We're all being fucking fondled.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sometimes with a smile.
Yeah.
And then sometimes with a slap.
Right, yeah.
I did a debate on Instagram live with an active duty Israeli soldier.
Oh, who?
His name is Rudy Rockman.
Rudy Rockman?
The
fucking, he's a J-book guy. I know him from back in my Jew book days. Yeah. Go on.
Well, he's real something.
Yeah, he is something.
And someone...
I think I blocked him, and I think he yelled at me to unblock him recently. It's all right.
Broody Blockman.
Yeah, Broody Blockman. Gotta block him. Yeah.
You know, but it was an interesting experience for me because someone connected us. I'd never heard of him. Someone said, I think the two of you would be, you know... And this, I'm brand new on this scene. Like, I haven't been active in this world for decades, ever since I sort of got disillusioned with Zionism and moved on with my life.
Right,
and then, you know, every time Israel, quote unquote, mows the lawn in Gaza, I'll post Norman Finkelstein on Facebook to all my friends who don't want to hear about it.
Right.
But I never had a platform anyway to talk about it.
Right.
So now I do, and someone's hooking me up with this, you know. And we did this debate, and he was stationed live on a military base right outside of Gaza, like in the south of Israel, with his military fatigues on, his machine gun in his lap.
Yeah.
From what I remember, or maybe that I've seen him in other interviews with it. But anyway.
I love having a machine gun for an interview, just in case someone asks the wrong question.
That's exactly right. That's exactly. No, we won't be going there.
Yeah.
No
comment.
No, you may not ask me.
Low, as it would say.
Sheket bavakasha.
Hey.
So, but just the experience of sitting there with him was stunning to me. Because here's this guy in this position where he's actually going and doing these things.
Right.
But his tone was so friendly mm-hmm. and, you know, it was the cadences that I remember from friendly Zionist co-workers at Zionist Company, the ones I never trusted.
Mm-hmm.
Shalom, everybody. Welcome. We are going to have a nice conversation now. And he called me his brother, and he's talking about how the Palestinians are our cousins. And the thing is that for the first half an hour or so, or even throughout it, I kept getting like charmed because I want to believe that he's my brother.
100%.
There's something appealing. He's very good looking. He's very attractive.
Right.
There's a kind of, it's seductive.
Yeah.
And I'm not even talking about him personally.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know the guy.
Right.
But the position he's in and the propaganda role he's serving.
Yeah.
He also has these views that are sort of radical for a Zionist. Like, he says he believes in the Palestinian right of return
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and he wants to see a future where it's everything's equal.
Right.
But like clearly there's just, I just didn't have the patience or the time or the ability to like chip away at where's the,
right.
Cause there's a huge contradiction in here. Cause you're right. going and blowing up these fucking people's lives right. right now for their own good.
Yeah. You are serving in what you know is ultimately going to be the ethnic cleansing of Gaza.
And if it's not the ethnic cleansing, it's the guaranteeing that these cousins of yours will not want to
ever
go near you except with a rock or a right. Molotov cocktail
right.
and understandably, and then you're going to have more reason to do what you're doing. So there's just something sinister and darkly dishonest about this,
yeah.
but it's coming in the package of Jewish togetherness.
Right.
And I felt that in my body. I wanted to believe it, and I kind of relaxed, and he was sort of hosting it. It was a mistake. We should have had a moderator, but you know, he was able to set the table for it. So he asks me, so Daniel, I want to first ask you, and I'll tell you my answer, you tell me your answer, and we'll talk because we're just two Jews talking.
Yeah,
and what is a Jew? And then we spend the first 25 minutes talking philosophically about what a Jew is. And then I woke up, I gave an answer I thought was good. I was interested in it. And then I like suddenly realized, Jesus Christ, he hypnotized me.
Right.
We've been talking for 25 minutes about what a Jew is.
Right, yeah.
While the dude who just walked behind him in the frame just came back from, you know, bombing a hospital.
Yeah. Yeah.
What? Why aren't we talking about that? Why aren't we talking about it? Because he's setting the terms of this conversation.
Right.
And the terms of the conversation have to go to the philosophical and the brotherly and all this kind of shit.
Right. Right. You have to go there because that is, I mean, especially when it's like Jew on Jew, like Hasbara recruiting, and actually it just yeah. like it's
that's as close as we get to Jew on Jew violence.
Yeah, it really is. It's just like kind of telling you that you are one, you're all the same.
That's right.
And you are, you know, of course we all have the same values, the same morality.
We all are heartbroken about what's happening.
Of course we are. Yeah, exactly.
Who would want this?
Yeah, I don't want to do
God
this.
God forbid innocent people should die.
Yeah, right. And you're just, you have no, I mean, it's very hard as a person who, you know, especially I think as an American, like in my case, like as an American person who is essentially a white guy,
yeah,
you know, when you have someone, you know, or an entity like, you know, Israel and, you know, telling you that you belong, this is Jew belong, you are, you know, you're not just, you know, some white person, you're something more than that. And in fact, like, if you really want to connect, you got to go to this place where you are from, quote unquote.
That's right.
It is incredibly appealing. It's why Birthright was such, I think, a monumental success.
Genius.
Because of the fact that, you know, you take kind of all these, like, you know, if we're being honest, like mostly white American teens,
yep.
Who, yes, are Jewish, but also, you know, have white privilege. I mean, since the establishment of Taglit, which I think was in the 90s, like these white kids have been white. Yeah, these Jewish kids have been white. At least the white ones have been.
And either way, they're assimilated into American culture.
Exactly.
But they know that they're not quite at the core of it.
Right. Yeah. There's something a little bit different. Yeah. You know, not 100%. It's like you essentially are, you know, you grow up being like, there are white people like me. There are Mexican people like this person. There are black people like this. So it's when someone says, no, this is like, it's not just like some additive to your being. It's at the core
of who you are,
which is like, it's not to say it isn't, but it's to say, and that core, you know, you can only find a connection to it in this place.
Well, but it's also playing on something that's unspoken, which is what they're really communicating is that core
mm-hmm.
is at the root of every feeling of loneliness you've mm-hmm. ever felt,
mm-hmm.
every feeling of alienation you've
yes.
ever felt,
yes,
every feeling of there being a yes. void at the center mm-hmm. of your where belonging should be.
Yeah,
basically, they're sticking a finger in the the historically understandable and inevitable traumatic wound that we're all carrying,
yes.
where lineage should be, where Yiddish culture should be mm-hmm. for us Ashkenazim, you know,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or Ashkenazim, as we'd say,
yeah.
And saying that your pain, your alienation, your confusion, which is also, of course, at that age, hormonal.
Yes, 100%.
Right? Why it's called sexual Zionism. Yeah. You grab them at that age.
I have not heard that term. Sexual Zionism?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dude, I know this.
Get a bunch of horny teens in a bus, take them to a concentration camp, get them really upset.
Yes, yes.
And get them really feeling close to each other and very vulnerable, and then fly them across the Mediterranean to the land of milk, honey, bikinis, raves.
Yeah, hot soldiers.
Hot ass soldiers, you know?
Yeah.
Including the guy I was talking to. He's hot.
Yeah.
And now you associate forever in their minds with you know, that now that foreign country is the place of attainment, liberation, ecstasy, joy, belonging, and all of that. And then anyone who wants to take that away from you must hate you
deep down inside.
Deep down. You know, I after I did that debate with him, which was 2.5 motherfucking hours long.
DJ, my God.
I had to take a 5-hour bath and then rest for about, it took me 3 days to recover, because not just talking to him, but doing it in front of tens of thousands of people.
Oh yeah.
And,
yeah.
And feeling this like it's like, I'm in this terrible position. I'm like, I felt like, am I betraying Palestine by even talking to him? And of course I got a lot of really supportive message from Palestinians being like, it was really hard for me to listen to him, but what you did was you exposed him, or you stood up for us and all that. So cool. I'm not sorry I did it, but it did take me a long time to recover in my body. Somatically, it really affected me, because again, that push and that pull of wanting to trust him and wanting to even belong to what he's trying to invite me to. But everything in my gut is telling me this is evil. It's pure evil. Yeah. I can't trust a thing I say. This is an illusion, like in some, you know, fantasy, some, like Lord of the Rings, a temptation moment. That's what it felt like.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, what is the actual pop culture metaphor I'm reaching for here? Are you a Star Trek The Next Generation fan?
I know of it.
So do you know Data?
Yes, of course.
Brent Spiner, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know his twin brother, Lore?
No, I don't. So, I'm not that far into the lore of Lore.
Exactly. But the wordplay is actually on point here. So Data is the android aboard the Starship Enterprise.
Right.
For you kids, this is the 1990s reboot of the original Star Trek series, Star Trek The Next Generation, with Patrick Stewart as Jean-Luc Picard and all that. And Data is, he's programmed, he was created by a scientist, who made him to be, you know, he's got a strong sense of ethics and morals and loyalty. He's very curious. He's very, very quick, very humble, but very, very powerful at whatever he puts his mind to. But he's very obedient and very loyal to his employers, really, the Federation, you know, who are the good guys, right?
Right.
Just exploring the universe, not interfering.
Yeah.
He has no emotions.
Right.
He wants to be human. Mm-hmm. So he's very susceptible to that's his one temptation. Anything that can make him feel something, he wants to feel it.
Mm.
He feels a deep alienation from spirit, from soul, because he has none. But he has he can feel the potential for it. Right. And he wants to learn.
Yeah.
So his humanity is often a plot point throughout the show. Well, at a certain point, a few years in, we find out that his creator made a twin brother named Lore.
Oh, shit.
And Lore looks like him, talks like him, same actor.
But he has a circle beard and he's evil.
He doesn't have a circle beard, but he has a smirk.
Oh.
And he has a glint in his eye. And he has a warm tone in his voice.
Yeah.
He has a very honey voice. And he says, brother. You know? And there's a kind of, like, you and I are above them. Right. They don't understand us. They're not bad, but we need to dominate them. And he's always trying to fuck with Data's program and, like, get him to join him.
Yeah.
And it's very tempting for him.
Yeah.
And that's how I felt afterwards. I was like, here I am with my ambivalence. Not that I'm not human. I very much am. But part of my humanity, part of what makes Data so human, is his ambivalence. He's not sure.
Yeah.
He's pulled in different directions, but Lore is certain and he's smooth.
Yeah.
And he uses the language of brotherhood to basically cloak a sort of supremacist, fear-based worldview that he wants to recruit Lore into. And what I realized afterwards also is that their very names are poetic in this respect, because when we talk about, you know, the competing narratives here of people who can see through Zionism as a destructive ideology versus people who are still clinging to it. Well, they have the Lore.
Right.
And we have the Data.
Right. Right. You know, 100%.
And so that was
That's just, beautiful. Yeah. I love that. And I do love that in this analogy, we're all androids in a sense.
Trying to be as human as we can to be within our constraints.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that is like a great kind of encapsulation of this playing on identitarianism.
Yes.
And, you know, you see that with, I mean, you see that with a lot of things. I mean, you know, in the United States, obviously, we're very identity politics focused, at least, you know, in the kind of liberal spheres, democratic spheres. And I think that is kind of the kind of insidious, like, and pernicious thing about Zionism and liberal Zionism is that it uses that language.
It always has.
Yeah. I mean, of course it always has, but it's in a more pointedly faux social justice sense.
Yes.
Because of the idea that, like, you know, I can't claim if I were born, you know, like in the 40s or whatnot, and I, you know, I came of age at around the time of, not just, you know, born at Israel's creation, came of age around 67 war. I can't claim that I wouldn't have be holding on to this feeling of righteousness that Israel, you know, is this country that is defending itself and, you know, it's doing what it needs to do, and the pride that I would take in that. Like, I'm not saying that any of us are any better than people who are, like, older and who, like, just hold on to this belief about Israel.
Absolutely.
You using that same rationale now just is so disconnected.
Yes.
Because of the fact that, you know, Israel is such a firmly right-wing and openly racist country.
Yeah.
You know, at a societal level and a governmental level. Yeah. And again, not to say America is not a racist country and at both a societal level and a governmental level. But the difference is that I think if you're trying to recruit an American liberal who acknowledges that America is a racist country and they're against racism and they're trying to fight against it, and you're using it, then you are a predator. You are preying on their openness, and you're preying on their progressive attitudes.
Yeah.
And you're preying on the fact that you know, people want to belong.
Yeah. Well, you're actually a very specific kind of predator. You're a vampire.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
you need the lifeblood of their identification with you to keep your thing going, because mm-hmm. your thing is not self-sustaining.
Right.
You know, it doesn't actually belong to that land. I'm not right. saying Jews don't belong to that land. Jews have been there
for a long, long, long fucking time.
But the
yes.
Jews who belonged there were actually marginalized and mm-hmm. used by the Jews who came there.
Yes, 100%. You know, yeah.
Totally used. So the predatory nature of
Zionism,
Zionism itself,
yes.
right, and it vampirizes, Jewish ambivalence,
mm-hmm.
Jewish uncertainty,
yeah.
Jewish loneliness,
and pride, and identity,
yeah.
and culture, and yeah. all of the things that are on its own, you know, are what are beautiful about being Jewish, and it takes that and it perverts it, and it uses all that to prey on people. Like when I went to, you know, Birthright, it was my only experience actually in Israel. All my other experiences with Israel have been just living in West LA my whole life, which is very, especially, you know, right next to a very Israeli neighborhood, not just Jewish, but as an Israeli yeah. neighborhood. There was, you know, Pico Robertson area. But when I went there, it was very effective because they were, you know, singing camp songs. I was like, damn, this whole country sings camp songs?
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. Like, it played on that, you know, that cultural connection. That,
yeah, the whole country is a youth group.
Right. That's what it was. That's, I was like, can you make a country out of a youth group? It's like, it's wild.
Yeah.
And it's effective in that way. And it's also, once you kind of like see it for what it is, it's incredibly offensive because you're just like, this is, you preyed on the fact that, you know, as a people, I'm not painting every Jew this way, but generally a little bit paranoid. Like, you know, there's always a little bit of, why is this person doing this to me? Or why is this someone taking advantage of me? Why does someone just hate me for no reason?
Or what's going to happen if things go south?
Yeah, what's going to happen if shit really pops off? I grew up watching Saved by the Bell. And I remember being like, why do they not like Screech? What is it about Screech? Like, I get that he's kind of goofy, but he's just trying to make them laugh. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
And this fucking Aryan Zach Morris comes out and just like shits on him in front of all their friends.
Yeah.
And I remember feeling a strong connection to Screech. Not just because I kind of look like him, but because I kind of act like him. Like, there was a bit of me that was, you know, a loud, goofy idiot.
Yeah.
And
when I watch Facts, I'm a little older than you. I grew up watching Facts of Life.
Yeah.
And Mindy Cohen,
mm-hmm.
Who played Natalie Green on Facts of Life, was like the only out Jewish teenager in the pop culture space. And
I
remember she was on the cover of
The Forward.
Nebbish magazine or something, yeah. whatever magazine they told us teenage.
Yeah.
But I was like, I was kind of in love with her. I also felt kind of sad for her because she was kind of like the ugly duckling, but then she got beautiful later. But yeah, no, like, we didn't have a lot of role models, and they were outcasts.
Right. And I'm not saying that like the representation of at least specifically Screech was, you know, openly anti-Semitic, but I remember as a kid just feeling a little bit like, he was, I don't know, feeling like there was something there. And then me always having a little bit of this feeling of like, is this a thing? So there's like a general like fear and a paranoia, and to prey on that, I feel like is what a lot of Zionist recruiting relies on. It's for me, once you kind of like, you know, wake up to that fact, you just kind of, you end up wanting to fight it with every fiber of your being. And it's so funny because right now, you know, we're at a time where you see people, I would say bad faith actors, some of them, I would say some people just earnest and ignorant, being like, I can't believe how much anti-Semitism I'm seeing, you know, and they're talking about like seeing a protest, a ceasefire protest, or they're talking about like a college student who, wrote an essay they're talking about stuff that
the word intifada.
Yeah. Just seeing the word intifada and, they're parsing the meaning of like, you know, if someone is a martyr or dies as a shaheed, like, is it, that means they killed Jews and all this kind of like, you know, thinking. And I understand that, you know, at least from the good faith people, I understand that feeling of like being like, I cannot shut up.
Absolutely.
When I see anti-Semitism. But for me, I like look at all that stuff and I just look at the programming that's done, you know, through years and years. And I go like, I agree, we need to fight anti-Semitism with every fiber of our being. And I think the greatest exporter of anti-Semitism in the world is Israel.
Not just exporter, but importer.
Importer as
and,
well.
And fabricator. And I don't just mean fabricator in the sense of making it up. I mean, it's gross domestic product.
Mm-hmm.
It's what it consumes. And in fact, you go all the way back.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, were you done? Could I?
Oh, well, yeah, I was. Jump in here?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to pull you forward a little bit.
So yeah. Tug me, baby.
Yeah.
a little podcast technique.
Yeah. Just pull my buddy.
Get in the frame.
Yeah.
If you go look at the writings of the early Zionists,
mm-hmm.
you want to talk about, you know, it's like, this has become such a cliche mm-hmm. since October 7th, but every accusation is a confession.
I know.
And when it comes to Zionism, it's just true. When it comes to Hasbara, so they call us self-haters or self-loathers.
Right.
Okay. You go back and look at the early writings of the first Zionists.
Yeah.
You want to see some self-hatred,
mm-hmm.
some rejection of what being Jewish has meant
100%.
In exile, in quote-unquote exile. being a wandering Jew, being a ghetto Jew, being a Talmud Jew, being an artist or intellectual or labor leader Jew. They rejected all of that. They saw it as weak and sniveling.
Yeah.
They wanted to be the Aryans. They wanted to build, you know, you look at Jabotinsky. He talked about the cowering, sniveling Jew, the victim Jew. No, we're going to create a proud, strong desert Jew.
Right.
You know,
right.
With a
nice square chin.
A nice square chin and a garden rake. And or an Uzi in his hands,
right.
Rather than like a Sefer Torah or a, right. You know, deep, deep rejection of vulnerability and ambivalence and intellect and moral thoughtfulness.
Right.
Understandable from a trauma response perspective.
Sure.
Right? I never want to feel that way again.
Yeah.
Where did it get us being so nice? Where did it get us being so moral? It got us in the ovens and the gas chambers. Mm-hmm. Look, I can feel that. And I think that sometimes the risk for people like me, maybe you feel this as well, is I'm so disgusted with the uses to which the exploitation of anti-Semitism is being put. And, you know, Norman Finkelstein is the prime exposer of this ever since his book, The Holocaust Industry, 20 years ago. And people hated him for writing that book. But it's true. There is an industry. You know, there's no business like Shoah business. And they exploit it, you know.
They
exploit it to the hilt. Not because of some sinister Jewish conspiracy to control the world.
No.
But, you know, you could be forgiven to if it kind of looks that way sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's actually to insulate this country that's a strong ally to U.S. foreign policy interests from criticism. But my disgust at all of that exploitation sometimes leads me to want to vitriolically dismiss any of the feelings or even the facts that might suggest that Jews aren't safe sometimes, or that there is hatred toward Jews, or even that there's irrational hatred towards Jews that weaves its way sometimes into pro-Palestine activism. I want to deny that because it's not convenient to my narrative.
Right.
But if I'm actually honest about it and I talk to Palestinians, they're like, no, we see it.
Yeah, of course.
And of course it would be.
Yes.
You know, and we don't need to deny some part of the truth in order to salvage the part of the truth that we want, because as Norman says, like, truth and justice are not at odds.
We can
actually, you know. So the fact is, these feelings, this is the way trauma works. You carry a feeling in your body from something that happened. And then your mind makes up a story about that feeling and it projects it outward and it sees it everywhere now and it completely limits your response flexibility in the present. And that's what happens with the Zionist stance. The trauma is real. The fear is real. And there may even be some evidence that points to it's not entirely gone, the anti-Semitism. It's true, it's not.
Of course, yes.
But the uses to which it's being put, the story it's being put towards proving, is one in which we will never be safe,
right,
in which anything we do is justified, and in which there's something shameful actually about being a target. There's something shameful about being vulnerable, and therefore we have nothing in common with vulnerable people, and therefore we want to align ourselves with the powerful. And that, to me, is the ultimate degradation of and desecration of Jewishness. So, like you, I think that's the prime threat to not just Jews physically, but to the Jewish soul.
100%. Hey, Vince.
Hey, Matt.
As you know, Vince, I love old internet memes. Remember the early internet's obsession with Chuck Norris jokes?
I do remember that.
Here's one. When Chuck Norris went to college, he told his father, "Now you're the man of the house."
Why do you bring this up?
Well, I was thinking about those old memes, and I started thinking, I wonder what Chuck Norris is doing right now. What has he been up to?
You know, I actually know the answer to that, Matt. Yeah, I recently saw a health video he made, and I was surprised. He's in his 80s, and he still seems to have energy and health.
You know, I saw the very same video, Vince, and in it, he says he's even stronger, has more stamina, and plenty of energy left over for his grandkids since making one simple health change that helps his digestion and nutrition.
That's almost too powerful to contemplate, but it's true. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife made the same change, and she's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger and has energy all day.
I am way younger than them, and I have energy for about 2 hours a day. And the problem is, you know, that many of us do not include fruits and vegetables and other herbs that increase health and energy in our own diets. Chuck Norris made a special video that explains how he incorporated these things with one simple product.
I love special videos, and you can watch it too by going to mymorningkick.com/podyourself, and it may change your approach to your own health.
Once again, that's mymorningkick.com/podyourself. mymorningkick.com/podyourself. Go there now and watch this very special Chuck Norris video.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And I think that that's when I see these, the way that people will look at, like, for example, Norman Finkelstein's book about the Holocaust industry, and other critiques of Israel, and just kind of like label them as anti-Semitic and whatnot. I look at specifically, we're talking about, you know, his book and the way that the Holocaust is, you know, used in order to bolster the Zionist project. I don't look at that critique, like, to look at that critique and say, this is, you know, inherently anti-Semitic. It's saying, like, it's like fooling the world. And then it was like, no. It is preying on Jews.
Yeah.
Specifically. Like, you have to understand that, like, the effect of something like the Simon Wiesenthal Center, or, you know, the Yad Vashem, or, you know, Museum of Tolerance, the effect on Jews.
Is that what the Museum of Tolerance is?
Yeah.
I've driven by it on the freeway several times. Yeah. I don't know what it is. I'm like, oh, that sounds tolerant, and I could probably tolerate that.
Oh boy. Well, the thing is it's like, you know, it's a Holocaust museum essentially, okay. And it is
anything with a name that milquetoast.
Yeah, I know.
And just inoffensive has to be a fucking.
I know.
Dark place.
I know. And it's like, it's so it's so dark, because once you kind of like realize, once you see the way in which places like that are utilized, it's like, for example, this is a tangent, but someone had posted something like, you know, did you know that the Palestinians built a village on, you know, on the ruins of a Jewish community that existed in like 300 CE or something like that. And, you know, trying to be like, so they're the ones destroying villages. I was like, yeah, first of all, we're all building ruins on top of other people's civilizations. And secondly, I was like, oh, okay, that's very interesting. Also, did you know that in Israel, they built, they desecrated a Muslim cemetery in Jerusalem to build literally a museum of tolerance.
Yeah.
They literally did that. And not only that, but it was so egregious that there was multiple stop work orders from people in Israel who were just like, and judges went going like, no, this is fucked up. We can't fucking do this. And it went forward. It opened 2019.
Wow.
And so, like, you know, to call it Museum of Tolerance and have it be on top of a fuck, it just...
Well, actually, it's perfect. Think of what else the word tolerance means in a different context. In the you know, addiction context.
Yeah. They've kind of grown a little bit of a tolerance.
Your tolerance goes up to the point where you don't even feel it.
You need more and more racism.
And you need more and more belongingness.
Yes.
And you need more and more...
blatant disrespect and Islamophobia and anti-Arab racism.
Yeah, and and military aid and destruction and fear and deterrence.
Yeah,
and you know,
but yeah. So like you know, I look when you're talking about these places like the Yad Vashem or Museum of Tolerance or whatnot, Holocaust museums, the effect that they have on Jews. It's different. It's different than people going into just Gentiles going to a museum. It's because it's not. It's like you can like a Gentile can go in there and they might be affected by it, but the absolute fear and horror and disgust and personal feeling of paranoia and the feeling like this could happen again is visceral. And so when you know when Norman Finkelstein is critiquing that industry, I read it as a critique of a project that is meant to prey on the trauma of Jewish people across the world. It is like Israel preys upon us. It makes us scared. It makes us paranoid. It makes us like feel like the idea that people actually say with a straight face in this country, we need Israel to exist because one day, no matter what, we are going to be forced to move there.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have to escape. That's it is like the people will say openly it is their contingency plan.
Did you see what Joe Biden said at the Hanukkah party?
Yeah, when he
the
said
the president of the United States said
not a single Jew is safe.
If without Israel, without not a Israel. Single Jew in the world would be safe. Basically, if not for this foreign country that I'm funding.
Yes.
I'd be like sending out the, you know, the SS tomorrow to round up our Jews, but I don't dare do it because of my buddy Israel.
Right. And like that to me, I look at that and I talked about this before, but it's why I look at Zionism and liberal Zionism in America and kind of diasporic Zionism, like people, they don't live there. They're not from there. But they're holding on to it because they know eventually that they'll have to move there.
Cash in that chip.
I look at that as defeatism. Mm. Because if you actually believe in any of the social justice ideas that you proclaim to, the idea that you're like, well, no matter what, we're fucked. Nazis are going to take over.
That's right.
That's you giving up. That's you saying, oh, okay, you know, at some point, they're always going to win.
Yeah.
The Nazis are always going to win. And we're going to have to move there. And in order for that to be possible, we're going to have to allow this mass atrocity, this genocide, and, this expulsion, the ethnic cleansing. Like that is defeatism. You have given up. And the idea that you would still hold on to any of these like principles while simultaneously justifying this thing, to me, I'm like, these two, the circle, this does not square. Is that it?
You can't square that circle. You
can't
square
that circle.
100%. But at the same time, you get to have it both ways. Because it's like, when that day comes, then we shall move back there, right? But in the meantime, we're going to live here, obviously, because it's fucking better.
It's better.
Of course it's better. I'm not Israeli. I don't speak Hebrew. I don't want to live. I don't want to serve in an army. I don't want kids to
Of Jews seem to die there.
That's exactly right. So we're going to stay here. We're going to pay for season's tickets to watch them play that sport.
Yes.
We're going to cheer them, right?
Mm-hmm.
They do that dirty work for us. And then some, but meanwhile, we're going to basically bankroll, underwrite, clap for, or ignore the cost that incurs upon another population that we'd rather not talk about.
Right.
Called the Palestinians.
Yeah.
Right. And they just have to fucking suck it up for us, for my great grandchildren's eventual need to flee somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, Ahmed in Jenin or Muhammad in Khan Yunis, whatever, has to lose his entire family. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm just trying to live here.
Yeah.
Here in you know, fucking Skokie, Illinois,
right.
or Patterson, New Jersey, or wherever.
Yeah.
Or the Upper West Side. Like, so the expectation we're placing on them. And then we wonder, why do people hate us so much? Now, people hate us so much for irrational reasons. There are irrational foundations for anti-Jewishness.
Sure.
I'm not going to gaslight people into saying, no, you're making it all up or we're making them do it to us. But it's not fucking helping.
No, it certainly isn't. Yes.
And this is the other part of Finkelstein's thing. I mean, I think he would say yes, you're right that Zionism preys on Jews, but his whole book, The Holocaust Industry, was about the shakedown of German banks.
Oh, right.
And
no,
the shakedown
right.
of European countries and the yes. uses of European guilt
yeah.
to create an iron wall mm-hmm. of diplomatic and military and economic support mm-hmm. for Israel
right.
in perpetuity. And that mm-hmm. is very sinister. And that yeah. starts to look like the stereotypes that we're so concerned about
right.
of a cabal of hook-nosed, mm-hmm. shady, scheming Hebes behind, yeah. you know, who right. look like you and me,
right.
behind the scenes, pulling the strings of everything, which is what, you know, I made a video, you know, one of my walk and talk videos, like mm-hmm. one of my first forays into like short form satire, like what you were doing. Mm-hmm. I was inspired by you.
Yeah.
And I was like, guys, you know, I'm really having a dilemma here because people are coming at me saying I'm an anti-Semite, I'm a self-hater. I'm actually promoting Jew hatred throughout the world. And obviously that's my purpose. Like that's what I'm hoping to do.
Yeah,
that's my intention.
Yeah, I'm trying. You know, I'm doing my
but
best.
Like here I am trying to cause a second Holocaust, but meanwhile my DMs are full of Palestinians saying, thank you, brother. I love you. Thank you for restoring my faith in the Jewish people. Thank you for restoring my faith in humanity. People like you, you are my true brother. So I'm like, this isn't working. I'm thinking I need to change tactic. I think I need to like get Sacha Baron Cohen and Amy Schumer together and yes. go behind the scenes and fucking browbeat TikTok executives mm-hmm. and tell them, you know, I need to get Harvard presidents fired
yeah.
for fucking like stumbling over some words
right.
in a hearing over some bad faith questions. I'm just wondering maybe that way if people saw us acting like a cabal of shady fucking golems
yeah.
or golems or whatever the fuck
yeah, yeah.
they might come for us already. Come on.
Yeah. like honestly guys, at this point I'm just gonna buy a fucking octopus suit. If I do it in an octopus suit, then will it happen? That's what you want, right? Like like 100% I agree with you, and that satire is like spot on because it is so like
this is good Christian baby blood, by the way.
Yeah, no, it's delicious. It's
farm to table?
Yeah. Well,
LA, man.
Neighbor to table. Really, really irony and rich. You know, it's like Folgers, but blood libel.
Irony.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. Hey, look at that.
Israel is irony anemic.
Hey, the irony dome. Yeah, but like, I look at so many of the things that they do, and so much of like the media spin and like the PR, you know, and you
they,
know,
they meaning Israel and Zionists, not Jews as a whole.
Yes, of course. Yeah, yes, of course. No, all Jews. No,
anti-Semites, fuck off.
Yes, Nazis, please die. But like, I look at the, you know, I mean, not to mention the incredibly disgusting, like strong arming, I think of that Norman Finkelstein talks about of, you know, the Germany and European states.
Oh, in order, they are so cucked.
Yeah, super cucked. Oof. And but I just from a media perspective, I look at it and I go like, yeah, you can't on one hand like talk about tropes. And with the other hand, be like, I'm going to use the media to silence people. It's like, I am not, you are not helping. You are not helping, like quash the tropes you're talking about.
100%.
You know, you're wearing the octopus suit.
Yeah.
Don't wear the octopus suit.
Stop troping it up, man.
Yeah, you're doing tropes. It's like, yeah. And it's why I like, you know, I feel like I'm going crazy whenever I see it, because I'm just like, I fucking hate anti-Semitism. I hate the way that Jews are.
Come on, give it a chance.
I mean, yeah, I got to try it.
Some tolerance, man.
I'm trying to tolerate.
There's a museum.
There's a museum about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm like trying to not like turn. I'm trying to not go crazy. I'm like watching actual anti-Semitism. I'm watching a campaign of anti-Semitism coming from Israel, playing into tropes, playing into Jewish fear, preying on Jews, preying on anyone who like isn't Jewish and is speaking out, and then saying they're doing it from as a representative of all Jews,
and of course preying on real live Palestinians,
and then of course in real life preying on real life Palestinians, and I look at it and I'm just like, this is, as someone who hates anti-Semitism, this is fucking atrocious. And it is such a huge fucking like it just it does anti-Semitism. It does. Greatest like entity, anti-Semitic entity in our time.
And that is actually its true nature. It's not its stated purpose, but it's its covert purpose, because it wants to confirm the story that says that this diseased ideology needs to continue to perpetuate itself. As long as there's a single anti-Semite on the planet, well, we'll keep producing them.
Yeah.
But then this begs the question, you know, for people like you and me, because I'm sure you're like me. This has been 3 months, right?
Mm-hmm.
The irony got me through maybe some of the first month, the outrage and the disgust. But at a certain point, it just starts, it's like, it becomes like, I need something else, because this is going to destroy podcast. Me.
That's why you start a podcast, Daniel.
That's the ticket. to quote famous Zionist John Lovett.
John Lovett. yeah, that's the ticket.
Yeah. I've been trolling him a bit, but nice. He ignores me. But what is the antidote? Because we're getting sucked into this vortex of hatred, and we can say it's not self-hatred, but it's hatred of something to do with ourselves.
Sure.
It's hatred of, you know, and that itself is corrosive.
Yes.
And it's exhausting, and we can't keep it up forever. Yeah. And I'm starting to, you know, I'm starting to think about things like love, which is like, it's like the actual antidote is a kind of, I mean, Cornel West is such an inspiration at times. Like, the sort of, what is the spirit of a blues people, a jazz people, a klezmer people, which is what we are. You know? What does resilience look like? It's got to do with love. It's got to do with joy. So, and when I look at it from that perspective, instead of like shaking my fist at, look at what these Jews are exploiting Jewishness, I'm like, no, they're not Jews to me.
Yeah.
No, I'm not even going to accept the debate on that. You're not being Jewish. Sorry. I'm not the anti-Semite.
Yeah.
You might be, but whatever you're doing, whoever you are, whatever you're doing in the name of, I got to stand against it, because I've got to protect, like, whatever is valuable about that, Judaism lives in me. Like, yes. I don't have kids. I know you have a kid. I'd like to have kids. If I'm going to pass Judaism onto my kids, I have to like preserve it, which means I have to be around people who keep it clean.
Yeah.
Right. I got to keep it kosher.
I know,
you know, and that's got nothing to do with bacon. It better have nothing to do with bacon, because I'm not giving that up.
Fuck that.
But the treif, you know, the unkosherness is in the mixing of tribal supremacy with a sense of security, you know, and we can go back to our earliest traditions, and we don't have to be religious, but we can consult our actual scripture and our greatest intellectuals and our thinkers and our scholars, and see that there's so much embedded in Judaism. It's so funny. Rudy had this crazy concept of Jews as the immune system of the world.
Oh, Lord.
He's like, that's his idea with the chosen people. We chose to, you know, and there's something actually beautiful about that, except when you distort it even 2 degrees,
it turns into Nazism. It's straight up Nazism.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And I said to him, okay, have you ever heard of autoimmune diseases?
Yeah, right. Do you know about lupus?
Yeah. Jupus. the body is fighting back. The body, you know, the immune system no longer knows what's the friend and what's the enemy.
Right.
But in terms of, we have to have inoculation against the virus. And that's what Zionism has become. It's Zionism is zombieism at this point.
Yeah.
And in a zombie movie, you could see your best friend get bitten.
Yeah.
Right? The only, and you might have to club them to death with a baseball bat in that movie, right? Yeah. You might have to bash their brittle skull.
Right.
Right? And say goodbye to them and cry, and then you know. But the difference is, we're living in the real world where we can't bash our brains in, but also it is curable, at least theoretically.
I believe that too.
People have choice, and we have agency in terms of how we show up.
Yes.
And in this new year, you know, I've been taking a little break from my you know, highly, deeply committed and tireless, indefatigable, read, compulsive, addictive social media use. Which I get so much praise and thanks for, and is very bad for me.
It's just so good.
But
DMs of love.
Oh, good God. Is it such a turn?
Love me.
Yeah. I am good. Tell me I'm good.
No, but I mean, let's be real. That's a dopamine hit when someone likes your post. It's scientific.
It is. And when people who have been silenced and who are grieving and hurting and in pain say to you, you give me hope and I can't speak now, but you can.
Yeah.
You know, that's a turn on. It's exciting. However, if I start making it about me and playing that role and yes. not coming back, just how did this thing start? At least for me, speaking up on October 8th, I got out my phone. I went outside and I just started, I pressed live and I started talking. I'd never done an Instagram live before. Yeah. I had no reason to think anyone would tune in.
Yeah.
I knew I had some things I needed to say to hear myself say them to clear things up because I knew things were about to go to fucking hell.
Yes. Yes.
And I just started talking and I was doing it from a place of not trying to get attention, not trying to prove anything, but just to put something into the world that could be an antidote or a probiotic or an antioxidant or right. something that would be healthy in a time that was going to be very malnourished and very polluted,
right.
very toxic. Now, here we are 3 months later and my platform's kind of blown up, relatively speaking, a lot of incentive to keep going and doing the exact same thing. But if I keep doing the exact same thing, time is moving on and my insides are changing and everything is changing. I gotta remember to reconfigure. And so I've taken a break for the past week and I'm coming back to it now yeah. in the new year. I want to reconfigure it from a place of like, how can I actually step outside of the entire toxic thing
yeah.
and only speak in a way that is clear and pure and not let these bastards drag me into their insanity.
Yes. Not let them.
So I can actually yeah. offer a hand out of the ditch that they're in if they want it.
Right.
If they want a hand out of the Sarlacc pit of you know,
of Zionism.
Yeah, I will.
Of Israel advocacy.
That's yeah. right. I will be Lando Calrissian, and yeah, they can be Han Solo, and I'll pull them out. Yeah. If they don't, I can't save them.
I know,
but I can't save them if I'm sliding into it too, and if I'm constantly like, "You fucking, you're ruining Judaism and all that." No, Judaism will survive you.
Yes, yes.
And it's in me, and it's in you, and it's in our jokes, and it's in our laughter, and it's in our joy, and all yes. that. You know, and that's my little sincerity moment for today.
I love that, and I completely feel that. I had a kind of a similar path. I mean, like for the first month, though, for me, I wasn't creating content. I wasn't like making videos or whatnot. I was talking to liberal Zionists I knew and trying to understand, like, not knowing they were liberal Zionists, to be honest. A lot of them, some I knew, and I was like forced a conversation with them. And then some who I was just like, hey, shit's kind of crazy out there right now. And trying to like gauge how they're feeling and finding out that they were like, yeah, I know. Too bad we got to kill all those people.
They were being like Rick the Hormone Monster in Big Mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
Let me show you how to masturbate.
That's my favorite one.
Nobody wants a genocide. If it's up to them.
But like,
just vibe, baby.
But I was like, you know, I spent the first month just kind of like not trying to give up on people. I still haven't given up on people, yeah. but I realized that there was kind of, I was like fighting against a current that I was not going to win because like, no matter how much sense I would make in a conversation with someone, and how little sense maybe they were making, I realized that at the end of the day, the phone conversation ends, and then the social media spiral of like, you know, here's, you know, local news footage of anti-Semitism happening on a college campus. You know, here's a faked video from one of those fucking Twitter accounts that look like news, mm-hmm. but it's like called Visigoth. Well, I forget what the fuck that is, but there's like one account that like, literally doctors' videos, and it said they're saying we call for Jewish genocide, and
yeah.
and they weren't. They said we charge you with genocide.
Well, that's one of the unfortunate. I'm a lyricist, so I heard that. I'm like, oh fuck, it's too bad. We charge you with Jew with Jewish.
Yeah, yeah.
The G
yeah.
sound at the end of no. charge. It's just that. But there was a more egregious version of that in Canada. In Canada, where I'm from,
is
ludicrous.
Yes.
I mean, Canadians are. No, I'm not even going to say it because I'm a self-hating Canadian. I don't want to get that smear all over your lovely, pristine, loving, tolerant podcast. Uh-huh. But the Canadian Jewish community is very dug in and very afraid and very it's very difficult for me.
Right.
And there's a group called CIJA, Canadian Israel Jewish Alliance or something like that.
Yeah.
And they put out a video and the caption said, listen to these protesters in Ottawa chanting, Judah, Judah, you can't hide. We charge you with genocide.
Right, right.
And you click play.
Yeah.
This is in Ottawa, okay?
Right,
near the parliament.
Yeah.
Where the government is, where the prime minister is.
Yeah.
You turn it on, it's like clear as day. Trudeau, Trudeau, you can't hide. It's like not even close.
Yeah.
That we charge you with and we want Jewish. You could applause if someone was listening for that. But it was just so transparent.
Yes.
I mean, that, if that was like, that was my Bad Hasbara moment. I'm like, this is all they have now.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, like you can't, if you're looking for it, if you're in that spiral of fear, I mean, it's just, for me, it just reminded me of 9/11. It was just like, everyone was having this 9/11 response you were just consuming the fear.
Yeah.
And you know, but the difference was for, I think, at least for Jewish Americans that I know, they were looking for confirmation of this kind of, that their paranoia was right the whole time.
Yeah.
So they were looking for this and they couldn't avoid it. They couldn't avoid, because they were on social media and the algorithm was telling them this is what you need to see. And so every conversation I was having, it was just like, you know, I was fighting against the tide. It just was not going to, it was not going to work. And so then I just started doing videos about people that I knew and that was cathartic and nice and whatnot. But
did it feel kind of like treasonous, or like, did you feel like
not at all? Yeah. But only because I mean, only on a personal level, where there was a few people who I,
that's all I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't
yeah.
mean to your people. I just mean to your people.
Yeah. 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 To the homies. Yeah. I mean, a little bit. There's a few people who I haven't seen since, and it very much inspired certain videos. And I was like, I'm sorry, but this is what you sound like to me.
Yeah.
You fucking say, you know, so like,
you don't like it, don't be friends with a comedian.
I know. I mean, listen, I've spent my entire career taking the shit dumbass people say I'm using it. No, but like, I felt like, that was like my mode of catharsis, but I feel you in that, like I still believe that people will come around. And I think the thing I'm fighting now is not resenting them when they do.
Yes.
Because like, there are people now who, you know, said some pretty awful shit to me and my family, who are real fucking quiet now. Real quiet. And I think some of that, you know, and some, like, part of me believes that what the reason for that is because this is just so egregious. I mean, who are you really defending now?
Yep.
You know, these are people who are just like, it's Netanyahu, you know, and whatnot. And now they can do that game where you just go like, oh, it's these two politicians.
Well, that's who the rape stuff is for. I'm not weighing in on what did or didn't happen.
Right, right, right.
But the daily constant reminder of that
will
keep people like that at least quiet.
Yes.
Because if that happened, then who am I to, then it's just a kind of,
it is
wet blanket on any sense of moral outrage about the present. You know?
Yeah. And you bring up something that I want to talk about before we close out here, which is that I got a few emails from people who, I was playing this clip of some psychopath in Israel, you know, on a stage with like Lee Kern and that guy Ilan fucking, you know, that guy on Twitter, he's like the PR guy,
Ilan Levy,
is that his name?
Ilan Levy, I think.
And then it was like Lee Kern and Michael Rapaport, and she was basically Rapaport's lost his fucking mind. But like, so there was this woman, I forget her name. She was a psychiatrist, and she was using her credentials as a psychiatrist to say that, they live next to, sociopaths. Yeah,
I posted about her this morning.
Yeah. And there's, you know, talked about 20,000 living. I won't live next to 20,000 rapists. And I'm like, oh, that's, so that is your, that's the way you're going to justify this, ethnic cleansing and genocide. And people were like, you should push back against those claims. And the way I feel about it is that this is a clear rhetorical trap. It is part of the narrative control. It's not that I don't believe that people who are journalists and who are, you know, this is what they do, shouldn't be critical and shouldn't, like, you know,
forensic.
Yeah, be forensic.
That's what my brother and Max are doing over at the Gray Zone. Like, they're doing, you know, and it's tough work and people hate them for it. But I think journalists need to be asking questions.
That's literally the job.
But as far as you and me.
And as far as you, the way I look at it is I look at it, you know, everything from the perspective of what is the Israeli Hezbollah machine trying to do here.
Yes.
And I look at this at the same way I look at the 40 beheaded babies, mm-hmm. or the baby put in the oven, or, you know, and I look at this and go, this is a trap. The idea that you would sit around debating whether or not this happened, as someone who's not there and someone who does not have the resources, yep. and, you know, and of course, they very purposefully will make sure that journalists aren't there. But journalists like your brother are doing the best with what they have. But they want us to be the guys who are debating whether the baby was put in the oven or if it was just burned like regular.
Right.
They want us to be put in that position, because then any critic of Israel is just kind of a fucking freak.
Right.
We're a freak because we're going, well, how did the baby, we're parsing how the baby died.
That's exactly right. Meanwhile, what are we not debating? We're not debating the undebatable, which is
right.
that yesterday,
yeah.
you know, 100 babies died.
Right, right.
And that, you know.
And they were burned as well, or crushed as well.
Right.
And it's not to, you know.
By our bombs and our white phosphorus and yes. our money and our diplomatic support right. and our veto and right. all that shit.
Right. And, you know, with the complicity, not just of our government, but also the passivity or outright support of people that I know.
That's right.
People that I love and people who are family and people who are friends. And so, you know, this idea that I would fall into their obvious poison pill of like, oh, are you against me too? It's like, no, I'm not. I wasn't there. I do know that there was an attack that happened, and I wouldn't like go around trying to justify which was okay and which wasn't
That's
okay.
Right.
That's not the point. The point to me is that parsing and promoting every single detail of that day has a very specific person. It's purpose.
Yeah.
It's to keep the person who is well-meaning and the person who has empathy and has the ability to feel from speaking out.
That's
it's to keep them in this state of constantly like, ugh.
On the back foot.
Yeah, what can I say? What can, you know, it's like every detail that comes out is promoted by bad faith actors, Hezbollah, Israeli, you know, government officials, Israeli representatives, our own State Department. And it is this like drip, 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 every day a new detail, every day a new atrocity. And the idea of like denying it to me is like, that's not my, I'm not a journalist.
That's right.
I don't know what happened, but what I do know is why they're doing it.
And I know that when I fall into that trap of just out finding myself outright, because I find the New York Times to be such a sus publication based on its track record of inventing atrocities to justify foreign atrocities.
Yes,
by us.
Yes.
You know, but when I fall into that trap, and I'm reminded, I saw downstairs at your place, you have a book about The Wire.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
there's that great line from the very first episode, which Marla Daniels says to her husband, Cedric, across the table.
Yeah,
the Lance game. Reddick, RIP, right? What does she say?
Yeah.
You cannot, the game is rigged, but you cannot lose if you do not play.
Exactly.
You know? And you have to be really clear about which game you're going to play and which game you're not going to play.
Right, yeah.
You know, the game of that somehow it's relevant what exactly happened for the purposes of is Israel's response justified?
Right.
No, Hamas could have, I'm being very serious right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like Hamas could have
killed your mother.
Killed my mother and the mother of everyone I know, you know, killed 400 babies, ripped their heads off.
Yeah.
And like done unspeakable things. I'm being terrible now.
Yeah.
But like, I'm trying to imagine the most horrific, gruesome thing they want me to imagine.
Right.
You know, you just meditate on what would Hamas have to have done
for you to
for me to be like, yes, I'm sorry, we have to go do what Israel's doing now. It's a good idea. It's morally justified. It's going to lead to something better. And the Palestinians basically deserve it, and we shouldn't stop it. There's nothing.
Yeah.
There's nothing.
Yeah.
Okay? And then I go back and I look at what's actually alleged based on what we know. Something like less than 1,000 civilians died.
Mm-hmm.
Some sexual attacks happened.
Yeah.
Some atrocities, some acts of hot-blooded
mm-hmm.
revenge by suicidal men who are committing one last act of homicide mm-hmm. as a final statement of what they're doing on this planet and their godforsaken lives.
Mm-hmm.
That some horrible things happened at the, you know, as people broke out of a prison camp,
right,
a concentration camp. There's nothing you can tell me that happened on that day that has me budge one inch,
right,
or even flinch. And you trying to use my compassion for the purposes of shutting down the rest of my fucking compassion,
right?
Fuck you,
right?
I'm not doing it, and I say that with love. And if I can, from love for something greater, like I'm just not falling for it, and I actually don't believe the person saying it that they actually believe it,
right?
Now I don't know if I'm with you that I believe everyone's going to come around. I think some people will not come around.
Oh no, I don't think everyone's going
to
come around.
And we have to hold space for those who will. We have to ask ourselves the question, what will our relationship be to them when they come around too little, too late?
Yeah.
There will be consequences.
Yeah.
We have to grieve the fact that some people are lost to us in terms of, you know, morally and spiritually.
Yeah.
But that's just how it is. But what are we doing to keep alive the North American world Jewishness
mm-hmm.
that's going to be left? Just like Israeli Jews there. Who are still going to live on that land. There's no future in which the Jews all leave.
No.
That's not a thing.
Yeah.
That's not happening.
It's not a thing, and it's also not what, to me, is being put forward.
No, except by the most strident, terminally online.
Yes, terminally online people.
Like Instagram-brained
right,
people
yes.
who just are looking for a kind of pure hit of ideological raw.
Yeah,
like they just want that fish scale up their nose into their eradicate all that. And you know, that's the seed of all kinds of means to an end evil down the road.
Yeah.
And it's completely understandable.
Yeah.
And
that's also inverse.
I can't go for that. No can do.
Right. And that's just the, you know, that's just the inverse of what that's just Zionism again. So
That's right. And that's one of the successes of colonialism. A dear friend of mine who's been educating me a lot about this recently, you know, points out that like one of the successes of colonialism is it's a virus that implants itself in our minds, and not just in the minds of the oppressor, but in the mind of the oppressed.
100%.
So that when the oppressed fights back, they do so using the mindsets and assumptions and working theories of the colonist. And this is why Audre Lorde, I think it was, said the master's tools will never dismantle the master's house.
That's right. Know? Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And it's...
And because you and I are Jews, mm-hmm. who were such great allies to African-Americans during the Civil Rights Struggle,
we can
absolutely appropriate that quote 100%. For our own purposes.
And what thanks do we get? What thanks do we get?
Where are they now?
Where are they now? You know, I listen to rap.
Look.
I listen to rap music and I say...
Three words.
N.W.A.
Ad Rock, MCA, Mike D.
Yes.
What haven't we done for your culture?
Exactly. You know, I know M&Ms. I love it. Whenever I go on Netflix, I go straight to the Black Voices tab and I say, what Black Voices will I listen to today? And now you're not going to let us, you're not going to let us do genocide?
Where's Black Lives Matter?
Yeah. Where is it? Where's the Jewish Voices tab? Oh, God, that tab. You know, that's next. The next thing is going to be Amazon's, like, you know, lifting up of Jewish voices.
Finally.
And it's
finally, we'll have some representation.
Yeah. And it's all going to be either just Zionist documentaries. It's going to be the entire show Fauda. It's going to be Sacha Baron Cohen's The Spy.
Yeah.
And then,
Or You Don't Mess with the Zohar.
Yeah. You Don't Mess with the Zohan?
Zohar.
Zohar.
Zohan? Maybe it was
I don't know.
Yeah.
I never saw
Sadler,
it.
Yeah.
Some people I know who are kind of like who are leftists and they said actually it's kind of good.
Is it?
I don't know. I've never seen it. It looks like dog shit to me.
I don't
I bet it's super racist.
Yeah.
But some people I know are like, just watch it.
It was the odds.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it was a different time.
No, but you're right. I mean the I mean, I just, I have to watch my own triggers. Mm-hmm. As my dad likes to say, the trigger is the smallest part of the gun.
Yeah.
And one of, you know, if I, knowing myself, the thing that gets me into a seething fireball of loathing for, yeah. for my quote unquote own people is the self-pity.
Yeah.
And the self obsession,
yeah.
as if we didn't have Schindler's List
right.
win every award, as if we didn't have fucking Exodus back in the 70s, right?
Yes.
You know what the theme song was?
No.
To the movie Exodus,
no,
based
no.
on the lyric in yours? These are literally the lyrics. This land is mine. Oh. God gave this land to me.
Oh, yeah, you yeah. know, yeah. I do as know if, that song.
You know, I'm not saying we run Hollywood, but it's not like we don't run Hollywood.
Oh, so we invented Hollywood.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Chappelle had that great thing about,
yeah.
he's like, that's terrible, terrible racist. It's, yeah. a, it's a racist stereotype that Jews control Hollywood. But... There's a lot of Jews out there.
yeah.
But this notion that somehow our story is in any way marginalized.
I know.
Holocaust history is given pride of place in, you know.
Yeah.
So, but this is the kind of thing that starts driving me down a rabbit hole of, man, fuck, we suck. And I
yeah,
can't,
yeah, you can't
live there because yeah. that is corrosive
if that, yeah.
to my own
yes.
Pride and holding it, now I'm playing the game that you lose if you play.
Yeah, and I always just look at it as like you have to have an equal amount of, if not more so, a disdain for not, it's not about your own people, it's about I mean it's about capitalism, it's about geopolitics,
yep.
it's about you know, the project of Zionism, like you have yeah. to look at all of this through a perspective of like
Eurocentrism.
Yeah, Eurocentrism.
Understanding the plight of Mizrahi Jews is yeah, very important too.
Right,
the position they're in all of this.
Right, and the fact that is like completely erased from the narrative. So yeah. it's like you look at it purely from just like us Jews and our self pity. You know, it's
including
like
including yeah. us left wing anti Zionist Jews and our self pity. Like
right.
that's where I
yeah
when I can realize.
So
oh,
when you
shit.
Pull yourself
now,
back.
Right, because I'm being that.
I'm doing
right?
it.
Because it's all inside Jewish baseball.
Yes.
It's like, when, who will save the soul of the mm-hmm. you know, the Ashkenazi North American Jewish identity? Well, maybe it needs to fall apart. Maybe we need to submit to the fact that we've reached an inflection point, a crisis point, and something needs to be reconstituted, and we need to see ourselves in a more healthy, fulsome way, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's a lot of it is going to have to be pointedly political.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it is also going to have to come from a local and community level. I mean, the one thing that I wish and I assume exists, but I don't know about is like, I would like a non-Zionist Hebrew school for my child, you know?
Yeah.
I would like, a non-Zionist temple or synagogue, you know? I would like, and I know that has to exist in some level, but I also don't know of any.
Well, if it doesn't exist...
We have to create it.
I'd like to live as if someone's creating it. We just have to find out who that is.
And, we got to find out who that
and
is
and help them. You know, because
yeah.
we can't be the only ones thinking about it.
Yeah, we can't be. And I know we're not. And so if it does exist, I'd like to know about it. And if it doesn't exist, someone else do it because I got a podcast.
Well, and this is what I was going to say is yeah. that you know it may not happen in our lifetimes, or you know, it may not be up to us because we might just, you know, be the end of history. But so
right.
the point is, as I'm going to say to your daughter when I leave here, it's like, it's up to you, girl. Like,
oh,
you got, because we're just gonna. I'm just being joking. I'm totally kidding.
No, please
like,
tell.
Like,
because she'll just say back just, to you. She'll go tractor.
Exactly.
Because she only says tractor.
Exactly. Which means I'm off the hook.
Yeah, yeah.
I told the baby.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
She's got to do it. I'm
kidding. Yeah. Up to you, babe. I'm give her a high ball. Five.
I'm good. We're good. It's all,
she's gonna roll
it's up
over.
To you, kids.
It's up to you. Tractor.
Tractor.
But yeah, Daniel, this has been so much better than the show that I had planned, because like I had like some dumb videos that I was gonna play, and I just was, you know, but then as soon as you started talking, I was like, oh, this is nice. This is why I started this podcast. It's like taking these like Jewish conversations from like inside walls to outside walls.
Yeah, man.
And it's like one of the things that I think I like about doing this is that like I came to a point where I was like, you know what? The idea, because I used to never want to talk about any of this in front of anyone who wasn't Jewish. Mm-hmm. And because I was, you know, if you agreed with me and you weren't Jewish, I'd be like, you hate the Jews. And now I have like come to realize that these are conversations that people have been having for years, but just not doing publicly. And it's very nice. It's very cathartic for me.
Well, me too. And look, again, not to get all in our egos about it, but the DMs don't lie.
Yeah, DMs don't lie, dog.
The actual effect, this is not the reason to do it, but the actual effect, one effect of non-Jewish people mm-hmm. witnessing Jewish people talking like this is they can breathe again.
Yes.
They can be like,
yes.
Yeah, I knew I loved Jews for a reason.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like I knew that I felt I related to them.
Right.
And
it breaks the programming of this dark, this dark attempt by people to co-opt Judaism and Jewishness by claiming they represent all Jews. Like every single Hasbaras, every single like a public Zionist claims they represent all Jews.
Here's a really funny trick they're now pulling.
Yeah.
I'll post something or a debate with somebody or whatever, and people in me in my comments be like, he is a member of a fringe. He does not represent all Jews. Yeah. And I'll be like, yeah, I know.
I know.
That's the point.
We don't claim to represent all Jews.
In fact, what the best of Jewish tradition is being willing to speak in the name of those who aren't the majority.
Yes.
Because those who aren't the majority aren't speaking for a reason. So yeah. It might as well be me speaking. You know, like that's my expression of my Jewish speaking for a minority. And then they bring out the term, like you were talking about the weaponization of like woke social justice language.
Yeah.
They love this stuff, man. Like 2020 has been just a boon for Zionists. Mm. All these new academic activist-y terms in the, you know, we can have that other conversation.
Yeah. But well, they're all from 2015 and they're all BuzzFeed.
But yeah, exactly.
So that's why they don't ring totally true to people. They're like, this is an old meme.
Yeah, that's 100% true. But tokenization.
Oh, yes.
Now they're saying, oh, someone's using token Jews like, you know, Matt Lieb or Daniel Mette or Norman Finkelstein or whoever. Yeah. And I'm like, that's not what tokenization means, you absolute tool.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not at all what it means.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
It's what we are is dissenters.
Yes.
And there used to be a magazine called Dissent.
Yeah.
A Jewish magazine.
Yeah.
And maybe there still is.
Yeah. And like the also, it's funny because the other term that they use a lot is they paint any anyone's dissenting, speaking out against Zionism, they call them an as-a-Jew. As-a-Jew.
So oh, right.
As a Jew, and then they say something anti-Zionist.
As if that's not what they're doing.
And that's all they do. All they do is just claim, like, your Jewish friends are scared. And it's just like, you can't claim to be all Jews, you know?
Remember that New York Times headline?
Yeah.
Why all your Jewish friends can't stop shaking?
Oh, God. That was in the New York Times.
Uh-huh.
Can't stop shaking. See, that's that BuzzFeed language I'm talking about. Yeah. It's just like
your Jewish friends are scared
and they literally can't.
they literally can't with this.
They're screaming. Like, it's just so childish. Your Jewish friends are shaking.
Yeah. Well, it's trauma porn. It's
It's
like your place of power, literally in this fucking diabolical matrix, is sitting in front of your computer generating re-traumatized feelings that make you feel scared and alone, screaming it to millions of people and having people being like, yes, girl. Like,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't make the feeling go away.
No.
And now you're just getting off on it.
Yeah.
And now you're just trying to infect the whole world with it and use that to make them shut up. It's terrible.
Yeah. It's terrible. It's browbeating people. And it's
so basically, I think what we can agree here, and now, you know, as a Gen Xer, I can say this. And
it's, Gen Xer.
This might be a little, you know, self-hating for you, but it's millennials' fault.
Oh yeah, I agree.
All completely. Of your lingo, your language, your technology.
I know. Because
now Israel's tweeting.
I know, like a child,
like a 23-year-old on BuzzFeed. So 2015.
Yeah, it is. It is watching them tweet like a child is like killing me because I'm just like, who is this for?
We need to do some some readings of Israeli.
Yes,
can we do this again sometime?
Let's do it again very soon.
And be more like
100%
comedian about it.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. So you live in New York, right?
I live in Brooklyn, New York. Yeah.
So we will, of course, be doing through the computer again.
Well, you know, I just started seeing somebody out here, so
who knows?
Who knows? Maybe
if that happens, God willing, Daniel, I would be.
I'm just saying, I might be visiting more.
Oh, okay. You're not moving.
Don't.
What do
so.
You need New York for? It's all the rats.
I'm telling you. If there's another Holocaust, you're going to be begging to come to New York. That's the Jewish. That's the safe
space
for Jews.
That's true. That's true. That's my Zionism is eventually.
That's right.
Moving to New York and getting a spot at the Comedy Cellar.
People are. Oh my God.
Hide me, Comedy Cellar.
Would you hide me and give me a second headlining gig?
Yeah. Would you hide me and give me a spot? Daniel, thank you so much for coming on Bad as Barra. We really appreciate it.
I'm sorry, Matt. I'm sorry. Excuse me, but you're mispronouncing the word.
It's Hasbara.
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 Yeah, but you know, I'm going to pronounce it the way I pronounce it as a way of shitting on.
In Hebrew, it would be Hasbara Ra.
Oh.
Bad is Ra.
Oh, that's right.
Hasbara Ra.
Yeah, that's right. Bad is Ra. I say raw, not raw.
Ra, ra, ra.
Ra, ra, ra. I was also bad at French accents when I was a kid. Mm. Thank you so much to everyone for listening. You can follow Daniel on his social medias. Daniel, what is your, what are your handles?
My handle, my one and only handle on Twitter and Instagram. Twitter is much more snarky and bantery, and Instagram is a little bit more sincere.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all me. Daniel B. Matte, M-A-T-E. And if people want to check out my musical theater work, it's at danielmatte.com. And if people want to check out my mental chiropractic service called Walk with Daniel, where I take walks with people and help them get their minds unstuck very quickly. It's not therapy. It's not coaching. It's like, let me get in, get out, line up your mind on a situation where you're feeling stuck.
Crack your brain
so that you can be your best self and just go and do the thing. Walkwithdaniel.com.
Check it all out. And patreon.com/fraudcast for all of you out there who are watching the show and are like, I'd like to support monetarily. Patreon.com/fraudcast.
In other words, I'd like not to be a raging anti-Semite.
That's right. It is anti-Semitic to not give me $5 a month or $8 a month. If you want to hear your name shouted out on a show about The Wire, you'd have to listen to that in order to... Also, anyways, patreon.com/frogcast. Email me with anything, badhasbara@gmail.com. All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, I'm trying to figure out a sign out. One sign out was there is a list. And it was very specific to that guy who was like pointing at the calendar. But I feel like people don't know that. What's a good sign out? Until next time.
I mean, if you want to choose, like, this isn't the Wire podcast, right?
Right.
If it was that, you could say you want it one way, but it's the other way.
Yeah. So if for the Wire podcast, I say, if you come at the king, you best not miss.
Yeah.
So now I need
this one.
What is the best? Keep. I could be sincere and just be like, free Palestine. But yeah, seems too sincere.
How about we're gonna have to think about
it. We'll figure it out. Yeah. But until next time, there is a end phrase coming. Thank you so much.
Don't believe everything.
Don't believe
anything that Israel tweets.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.
Jumping jacks was us. Push-ups was us. Krav Maga us. All karate us. Taking Molly us. Michael Jackson us. Yamaha key. Us. Happy Meals was us. McDonald's was us. Being happy us. Bikram yoga us. Eating food us. Breathing air us. Drinking water us. We invented all that shit.
Save big on brunch for mom. All in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.